If you want to explore how businesses actually use the massive amount of data they are collecting about you every day, you have landed on the right podcast. We look at the tech, people, and the processes cutting-edge businesses are using to collect data and answer the question, I have the data, now what? Here is your host, Asha Saxena.
Welcome, divers. This is your host, Asha Saxena for Dive with Data. As we continue our conversation about big data in healthcare, sharing of data clearly helps. It's now not possible that our digital personal data not have an application within modern medicine. As we discussed in our previous episode, the emergence of electronic health, telemedicine, and medical health, and big data has impacted the health benefit, doctor-patient relationship, and scientific understanding of the human body and illness. But the exploitation of personal data is a sensitive subject, and it affects each one of our privacy directly. So today, on Dive with Data, we'll be discussing this important topic of data privacy and ethics in healthcare with Daryl Walter, Director Enterprise Information Management at Penn State Health, ranked best hospital in South Central Pennsylvania and number 4 in the state. Clearly, using big data in healthcare raises ethical issues if the data is used without patients' consent. Medical records are governed by rules to protect privacy in ways that traditional consumer marketing data is not. And while most health data can be stripped of identifying information like your age or your lifestyle habits, it could cross into an ethical gray area if patient privacy is compromised. Meanwhile, the federal government has opened its immense store of healthcare knowledge, including data from clinical trials and information on patient covered under public insurance program. Patients are generating and sharing their own data through smartphone apps and online patient communities. All of this information could be a part of big data mix used to find patterns and reveal insights. There is also value in moving more big data findings into the hands of individual physicians, who can then consider new evidence alongside their own experience and knowledge to improve patient care. Data may help doctors better diagnose rare cancers and aid in finding and sharing treatments that are working. With the support and urging of federal entities, the medical field is becoming more open to big data endeavors. In an effort to reduce the time needed to launch new studies and get patients the most promising results, the new Federal Patient-Centered Clinical Outcome Research Institute announced combining data from 29 existing health data networks. We're expanding the growth of data by consolidating and sharing. But the big question remains, how is our data privacy being protected while we are moving in the direction of personalized treatment discoveries? So let's welcome our guest for today, Daryl Walters, Penn State Health. Welcome, Daryl.
Thank you.
Tell me about your role, information management, enterprise information management. What does the role entail?
So I'm responsible for everything having to do with data for the health system as well as the College of Medicine. So we have multiple missions, obviously the clinical enterprise, so all data related to that, the research mission, as well as academics, you know, the College of Medicine, and a community outreach mission. My team is responsible for all interfaces between transactional systems as well as into the data warehouse. We do analytics, business intelligence. We do data warehousing. We're getting into data governance and master data management now. And then I also have responsibility for identity access management and the web development team. And the reason for that is the tie-in with master data management, and the web is a mechanism to deliver information to people, so that falls under the umbrella of enterprise information management.
So you have an interesting role. You're managing all the data for the health system, Penn State Health, and not only the data, but you also, what do you do with that data and how you make sense out of the data?
Yes.
You know, we talk about science and we talk about data, and the whole new concept of big data and data science is just coming up, and people are becoming more fascinated with the algorithms they can create and the deep learning the machines can have. How can you talk about your experiences with science and data and what you have done within your organization?
Sure. So there's a whole variety of things that we've done. You know, there's some simple things. Take a step back. There are some very basic operational things that we do with data that are very important. So, for example, one of the first things we did was to provide information to the facilities and safety group to say, how many patients do we have in-house right now that weigh more than 400 pounds? Because they're thinking about the business continuity plan to say, if we have to evacuate, do we have enough lifts in-house in order to do that? So it's just some very basic things that we do. But some of the cooler stuff is we have a sepsis alert program where the electronic medical record monitors vitals and different factors and then fires an alert to the provider to say this patient is not doing well and is potentially developing sepsis. My team didn't do that implementation, but we did the early work to analyze all the data that was in our EMR to say, could we develop an algorithm that would identify patients that were at risk of developing sepsis? That work led to an implementation project, and in the first year, we reduced our sepsis mortality by 25%.
Very nice. You know, we talk about understanding your consumer, and that's what you're talking about, that you're really getting into this world where you understand your consumer, your patients who are coming to you, and you, because you understand them well, you can now serve them better.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about data and ethics. How far is it fair to go when you're trying to understand the data of your patient?
Right. So we sit on a wealth of information about our patients, and you know, we follow all the regulations from a HIPAA standpoint. But when you want to advance the care, you want to improve the quality, you want to do research, we're constantly wrestling with what level of access is appropriate for people, and we have all policies and procedures around this, but what can we grant people and how far do we go? What's happening more recently is you're seeing health organizations really get into customer relationship management, and so leveraging the healthcare data in order to target marketing of their services to those patients. And so it does raise a bunch of ethical questions about, you know, is it okay for us to mine that data to target you for, you know, some type of procedure that we want, we think we can sell to you, bariatric surgery being a typical one that you're talked about. And then if you look, there are vendors out there that then pull data from public sources, social networking, those sorts of things where there's a lot of data that's published out there publicly by people on Facebook, on Twitter, whatever, and they can publish, you know, they had pizza for dinner, and they say, okay, so is it good for your healthcare provider to have access to that, to then say you're ordering pizza too much, and you shouldn't be because you're a diabetic patient, right? So those are some questions that I think the healthcare industry in general is wrestling with. Being from central Pennsylvania, where we tend to be a little more conservative, and we don't push that envelope as much as other organizations do, but there are organizations that are pushing that pretty far.
So tell me how healthcare organizations are becoming data-centric. This whole concept of that I can gain knowledge out of data, I can, you know, you apply technology or algorithms or smart intelligence to this data. How are organizations like yours are taking the journey, a data evolving journey? What are the methods you've used and what would you recommend?
So what's happening in healthcare, you know, it's a consolidation going on in healthcare and these health systems emerging. And really, you have to become a part of a large health system to survive long term is the thinking now. And because of that, there's a lot of change and it happens fast. And in order to support that, you need data in order to determine what change is appropriate. You know, from a market perspective, where your service is needed in the area, you want to understand what facilities are around and what your competitors are doing. And so that need for agility and really to have good data that you can make strategic decisions off of has really escalated the requirement to have good data management practices in the organization. Historically, we've been a very application-centric health system and really thinking in terms of applications. And the push we're making these days is to say it's not so much the applications, those are just mechanisms to view update, delete data. You really need to be data-centric and think about what data do you have in the organization, where does it exist. Pick a provider. You know, provider information could be spread across dozens of systems, and each one has pieces of information that are very valuable, but no one system has everything about a provider that is valuable. And so that's where master data management and data governance come in order to establish a provider master that we can provide that 360-degree view of our providers.
And how do you implement a structure like that? I mean, having a common, a golden record or, you know, common methodology, how do you actually create that? Do you need committees? Do you do it on your own? Is it your IT department alone? How does it work?
It can't be the IT department alone. So I do live in IT, but I am more business focused. And it has to be done with the business. You can't do data governance and master data management well if you don't have heavy involvement from the business. It does take committees. So we partnered with Informatica and InfoVerity and developed a roadmap for data governance and master data management. It's a two-year roadmap that we have right now. We're launching into it at this point. And our goal was not to just stand up the next piece of software from Informatica, but to actually implement a program so that at the same time we're standing up the technology, we're putting in the business processes and the data governance structure in place, so that nothing we put in that nothing goes into that repository that hasn't been vetted through a governance council. So it's a series of committees. We have executive sponsorship for the program. The CIO has asked himself to sit on the data governance council because he's vested in it, and we have other CXO levels that will be involved in that as well. And really, at this point, the business is really clamoring for data governance. We had a kickoff, and I was surprised at how much engagement there was. And really, the reason for it, and this was engagement all the way, you know, at the C level. Really, the reason for it is because they recognize how much pain we're in from not having good data governance and good master data practices. And it's impeding our ability to have the data we need in order to make the strategic decisions and having that agility that we need in order to respond.
So we spoke about data governance and why it is important. But for our audience who might not know what data governance is, can you expand on what it is and why is it important?
Sure. So data governance really is all about how you decide how you're going to decide about data. And it's coming up with standard definitions for things. So, for example, one of the things that healthcare really wrestles with is what's the definition of a clinical FTE? It's very complex, especially in an academic setting where a clinician has research appointments, they have academic time, and coming up with, well, how do you calculate their clinical time, their clinical FTE, because they might be in the clinic but working on academic stuff maybe in their office. So it becomes challenging. So getting agreement across the organization to say, this is our definition of what a clinical FTE is. Here's how we're going to calculate it. And then putting the policies and the procedures in place such that everybody is calculating it the same way and everybody understands what the definition is, so that when you're looking at that information on multiple reports, it's consistent across those reports. Mm-hmm. The challenge we have today is there's data all over the place, there's reports all over the place, and when you don't have consistency of definitions and the way that the data is governed, two different reports on the same thing can say completely different information, and then the user gets frustrated and confused because is this one right or is this one right, or are neither of them right? So data governance is really important to get that consistency and put the process and the policies in place to ensure that the whole organization is following that.
So it sounds to me it's the foundation. You know, without the foundation, you're running loose. What about the fear of the startups? You know, we are living in the world where Silicon Valley, you see, you know, millionaires, billionaires coming out of Silicon Valley. We have Boston, which is producing a lot of healthcare startups in New York. Mm-hmm. How do big organizations handle this threat from somebody who's coming out of building a company out of the garage? and coming out with the latest and greatest algorithms and, you know, creating technologies. And big healthcare system are pretty set in legacy, and they have to very quickly adapt themselves and compete with people who are coming out with telemedicine or, you know, latest genomic solution or something in healthcare providing this new app or new technology. How do you compete with?
So first of all, we also try to stay current with that. Those technologies. So, you know, we are doing genomics, we are doing telehealth, and so we're trying to stay up to date with those capabilities. It does, it ultimately serves the patient. Disruption from, you know, these large investors like the latest Amazon and Chase deal, that's good for healthcare because healthcare needs to move into the modern times. It's so frustrating as a patient to go in and you know that the technology's there, that you can use an iPad to check in and, you know, walk yourself in the, into a room. But in healthcare today, largely, you're going up to the desk, you're filling out a piece of paper, you're handing it to them, and then when you get into the room, you're being asked those same questions all over again that you just filled out on the piece of paper. And that's frustrating to people because they know the technology exists that you don't have to do. So I think disruptions from these investors is a good thing because it pushes healthcare to become more current in technology.
So, you know, you spoke about the three giants coming together to create the healthcare services, and Amazon having the kind of access they have, JP Morgan Chase having the audience, and the Berkshire Hathaway has the name and the money. Who do you think should be scared? Is it providers? Is it payers? Is it?
Probably we should all be scared. It's hard to know. I mean, what I see in that deal is, you know, Amazon has such a great distribution capability. And so, you know, you look at it from a pharmaceutical perspective and the distribution of pharmaceuticals, that seems like a natural fit. Beyond that, I haven't wrapped my head around, like, exactly what the impact's going to be to a healthcare organization like us. One of the things about healthcare that we've found, I've spent a lot of time with our chief marketing officer, and he will always tell you, you know, it doesn't make sense to put up a lot of billboards and stuff because really at the end of the day, patients want to go someplace close to home for their care. And it's all about the relationship with the providers. And it's word of mouth from the family and friends. And so I think that wanting to stay local is what is going to help an organization like us. We're a big acute care organization for Central Pennsylvania. And people don't want to drive to Philly or to Pittsburgh or to Baltimore for their specialty care. So that's what helps us in this market.
So talk to me about your organization. What is your organization's top three initiatives? Is it patient care? Is it technology? Is it growth?
So it's patient care focused. So our latest strategy approach that we're taking is a 10-20-30 rule. So we want all patients in our area to be within 10 minutes of a primary care physician, within 20 minutes of specialty care, and within 30 minutes of an acute care hospital. And so that's a big piece of our push right now in the organization is building out our network to make sure that that 10-20-30 rule is in place. Population health is a very strategic initiative right now that we're looking into. And again, how do we leverage the data to identify gaps in care? And then on the research side, we're trying to grow our research funding. We're trying to double or triple our research funding, which again is going to be invested back into research in order to improve the care for our patients.
You know, you're talking about your big initiative on population health and research. What are you doing in research? Where do you have the funding for, or the interest in, or the need for in research? Is it patient care? Is it a specific disease, or is it, you know, operations or technology?
It's across the board, but we are one of approximately 60 institutions in the country that got the Clinical Translational Science Award from the NIH.
Congratulations!
Thank you. And so as part of that, there's a whole program to really amp up the research and leverage data really for research. Informatics is a big piece of it to leverage the data for research to accelerate the time it takes from doing research to get it into the healthcare environment and actually use it to treat patients. The other thing we're involved with is what's called the BCORNet, which BCORI did grants for organizations to do collaboration across institutions. So we're part of a network with a half a dozen other institutions, primarily across the state of Pennsylvania, but there are some, we have some additional players that are in other states as well. And the concept there is the group came together and they agreed on a common data model, again, back to the data governance and the master data management, agreed on the definition of the elements and how the data would be put together, and they came up with a common data model. So everybody in the network adheres to that common data model. We pull the data out of our electronic systems and we submit it. And then what that does then is a researcher can then run queries and pull data from across many organizations. So if you have something like a rare disease where maybe Penn State Health only sees 50 of those patients a year, but you know, UPMC sees 100 and Hopkins sees, 100. You pull those together, you have a larger, richer data set that you can do research on.
That's great. That's like heaven for researchers.
Yes.
They're probably thrilled about that.
Yeah, and the key factor in that was the common data model. If you didn't have that common data model, it would be very difficult to do that.
So now these researchers are really tapping into the intelligence and the data that is available from all different kinds of patients from different regions. You know, you're talking about what works. So I want to hear about if you have some use cases or an example you can share with us where it worked. Give us your successes in last 12, 24 months where you feel like you implemented an analytics or data solution and it actually worked. There was a use case and it was a success.
Sure. So, you know, there's a handful of examples we could look to, but let's take one area where, so all academic medical centers submit their data to a company called Vizient. There's a clinical database there, and then Vizient, they used to be known as UHC. They do benchmarking, and they come out with an annual award for the best-ranked healthcare organizations, academic healthcare organizations. And we leverage that data in order to understand where did we have to make quality improvement efforts. And so we did a deep dive into the mortality data. So they have a risk-adjusted mortality model. And we really spent a lot of time studying that algorithm and understanding what are the factors that drive up the risk of mortality, and then worked with our clinicians to work back into the process of caring for the patients, but also documenting, making sure that we are documenting appropriately the risk factors that our patients have. And as a result, we got into the top 10 performing hospitals in that.
Well, that's benchmark. Great. That's great. So you're seeing immediate impact as you implement these solutions and try to figure out what the risk factors are, who are my patients, you know, who I need to serve more or have a care associate assigned to, or, you know, so you have you were talking about the reduction of the care gap. And so that's how you're implementing that.
Yeah.
So and what are the biggest trends in healthcare and technology are you seeing? What do you think the future of healthcare is going to look like?
So we're seeing a big trend in the whole telehealth movement and the ability to care for patients remotely. We're actually implementing, we have an electronic ICU set up so that we have folks remotely monitoring our patients in our ICU. We are working towards establishing ourselves to be able to do that for other hospitals as well. So that's one trend we're seeing quite a bit. The inclusion of patient-reported outcomes, patient data, you know, we all have Fitbits and everything, and the ability to integrate that with the electronic medical record is another area that we're looking into.
So as a departing wisdom, anything which you would want to share with our audience, which you think they could take home, a skill as a leader, which they should have or they should work on having to be successful?
Again, I think the most important thing is be business savvy and really care about the business and understand how the business works. Be able to talk to people, have a relationship. Relationship management is critical in, I think, every role, but in particular this role. And so that would be one thing I would look for.
Great. Thank you so much for being here and sharing all your wisdom with our audience.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
As we heard, data and ethics are on top of mind for healthcare systems. They're watching the gray lines, and we continue to see the implication of regulations which are working on protecting our privacy. Privacy is going to be the top priority as the machine learning gets smarter and smarter. This is an important topic, and the discussion and discoveries for privacy and data securities will evolve as the technology gets smarter. Another great advice from Daryl was to focus on building human relationships. The growth of big data and artificial intelligence may continue to provide benefits, but strong human relationships will continue to be the core of leadership. With that, we come to the end of this episode and promise to come back and continue our discussion on healthcare and data evolution. Tune in to learn about precision medicine and personalized health in our next episode. With that, goodbye and see you again.
We just scratched the surface of data with today's episode. If you want to join in the full conversation, check us out at divewithdata.com or follow us on Twitter at divewithdata. And as always, leave us a rating and review if you enjoy the show. Your feedback is what keeps this podcast going. Have a great day.